Good morning, everyone. This is First Up, a Step Brothers edition. I'm Matt Kaz. That is Carlo Colaiacum. I'm in for Eric Karolnik. Dale, how you doing? How's your Chewbacca mask and your crossbow?
What's up, my stepbrother? Happy Monday to you. Happy Monday to everybody else. And happy half month of August. Wow.
I can't believe
we're there already. August 15th. It's like August just seemed like it just got here. Now it's almost halfway gone. It's like we were talking prior to us coming on the show about how busy you've been and how just like you feel like you haven't been home. And it's just like, I'm going to be honest with you, I kind of feel the same way. Like, I had the whole first week of August off, and then I had, you know, I planned my schedule because we've got to submit our vacation days in the month of June, right? So you plan out your summertime holidays, and it's not really much holidays. Like, it's not like I'm going anywhere, which, by the way, I want to get into with something about going away on holidays in a little bit here.
Done.
But it's something that AK continues to hound me out because he always sends me messages as like the weekend is here and Monday comes. He's like, I hate you so much because I hate how awesome you planned your summer vacations because I have every Thursday, Friday off. I try to make it, you know, extended weekends, right? Because, you know, to take a whole week off, which, you know, I did in the month of August because I worked so much and I just kind of needed that relief. Right, just a nice 5-day break. But unless I'm going somewhere, like, what's the point in taking a whole week off? It's like, you know what?
Unless you're at a resort, unless you're going to like even just in Ontario, you know, you're going
right somewhere.
Oh, we're doing Niagara Falls and Great Wolf Lodge and this and that, and we're doing a full week of it. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, like the good thing is that this summer we've as a family enjoyed a lot more with the kids because, you know, we can do stuff now with the kids. The kids are going to be active and social and play with their friends. And so we go on group dates and group outings and, you know, they're in camps and stuff like that. So that's been a lot of fun. But these extended like 3 or 4 day, you know, weekends that I've sort of set up have been awesome. You know, it's been a nice refresh.
Let's discuss this because, and you're off again this, you're off near the end of the
Thursday,
week.
Thursday, Friday again.
Thursday, Friday. Yeah, correct. And I'll be with you here today and tomorrow. For myself personally, I prefer having the Monday, Tuesday off versus a Thursday, Friday. If I can choose, because Friday, as you know, the easiest day of the week to do a show.
Yeah, so, you're right.
You know, and the thing is on the weekend, you're probably busier, you're probably seeing more people, other like-minded people that have the weekend off. And then somewhere on Sunday, you're not thinking about that alarm going off on Monday.
Yeah.
I like the Monday. Anyone can
handle
the Thursday, Friday.
That's actually a good call. You extend the Sunday into the Monday. But, you know, ironically, when I booked these two, I had a couple of golf tournaments that I had to play in on Fridays as well, too, right?
Okay, so that's good.
It ended up working out. But anywho, it's good to be back. Good to be working with you. I love the Step Brothers edition. I always get excited when it's an extra Step Brothers edition of First Up where we sit here and talk sports. But there is something that I wanted to get into about traveling because I know you've been doing a lot of it. You do a lot of it because Amy, your girlfriend, is a flight attendant and stuff like
correct.
That. Correct. I want to bring up something that brought a lot of, you know, different opinions yesterday. And it was a tweet from Kara Wagland because I guess she's coming back from vacation as well too. Her family and Steph Appolito and Noodles' family have gone on vacation together. And she shared something curious online. She goes, she's got a flying question. Maybe you can help answer this too, because I have a stance on this. I'm not someone who ever reclines my seat, but is it offside to recline your seat when there's a baby on someone's lap behind you, asking for a mom that's got a kid on my lap? And I'm like, why is this like even?
It's not
something?
A good question.
It's not even a question.
If you recline your seat and behind you is a child and a mother, then you get tossed off the plane, and we decide whether or not you get a parachute. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. We'll find out together.
You're on that side of the fence.
You don't recline. Not if behind you there's a child. That child could go off. That's a ticking time bomb, my man. The last thing you want to know is as you put your seat down, and then there's a bigger chance you're going to be sitting behind a child crying.
This is where me and you have different opinions because, like, let's be honest. Unless you're sitting in first class, how far do these seats recline? A couple inches?
It depends. You're right. A couple inches, but there are some of the older planes that do more of a real recline.
Okay. But here's my argument to this, okay?
Yeah.
You pay for your seat.
I know the argument.
Which means you pay for everything the seat allows you to do. So why do people get so upset when you recline your seat when the person in front of you who reclines your seat, if that's what they choose to do, all you got to do is recline your seat and you get that same amount of space back. Problem solved.
I understand what you're saying. I have an answer for this, and I will do this in a sports context. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a two-pointer here. One, it used to be easier to recline your seat back in the day when there was fewer rows. There was more space. But planes now have been doing it so they've been adding more seats to make more money. It's the equivalent of, why is everyone yelling and screaming about football players in college need to get paid? They didn't do that in the 80s. Well, in the 80s, there wasn't that TV contract where the leagues were getting billions of dollars. Things have changed. So that's point number one about why the recline is a bad thing. The second one, Carlo, I'm going to take it to your sport. Sometimes it's just about being altruistic. It's about being a good teammate. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of a game when there's an empty net and there's two guys and one guy's clearly got an easy goal, but his partner hasn't scored a goal in 18 games.
You pass it to him.
You pass it to him. You let him get the empty net Gino and all is right. Sometimes you see the person behind you and you go, you know what? No, for this flight, I'm going to be a good teammate. I'm not going to recline.
Okay, but let's be honest, Matthew. If everybody reclines, the problem's solved. You gain the space that you lose back.
But it's uncomfortable.
If this is such a big problem on airplanes,
yeah,
then why do you allow the seats to recline? Why do you even allow people the option? If I'm paying for my seat and I need to recline a little bit because I can't sit up as straight as it wants me to do, I'm going to do it. I don't care what somebody behind me thinks.
All right.
Because if they're going to complain about it, I'm going to turn back and say, excuse me, I'm allowed to recline my seat.
What if they're nursing a baby? And the thing is, sometimes when you recline, you don't – like, I understand what you're saying is that it all seems to be even. But sometimes, especially when you got your tray, and there's some people that still recline, when that – especially the person in front of you, if they're a larger individual, that recline takes up a little bit more of your space. I'm not a big recliner. Now, I'm 5'7", so I don't need to as much. But I just feel bad. I feel bad going full recline to the person behind me.
Okay, but look, I'm not trying to take away from the struggle of a mother on a plane with a child because,
that's
what
you're
real.
Doing. Does Carlo hate children with...
Hold on a second. Aren't you supposed to buy a seat for the child?
If they're of a certain age, they don't need to. If they're like 1 year old or up to 2 years old.
I just think that, like, people that make a big deal of this, it's like if your space is being interfered with, all you got to do is recline your seat and you gain the same space that's taken away from you back.
I understand the argument. Like, I understand the logic.
If everybody does it, the problem's solved.
Text the show at 105050. Your thoughts on reclining seats? Do you full recline? I've been on a flight where the person in front was asleep and even the food came, they were just asleep with full recline.
Yeah.
It was annoying. It was annoying as hell. But also, have you not...
But that's another thing. If your food comes, it should be a rule on the plane. You know when they go on the plane and...
It is a rule. But some people ignore it, yes.
When the stewardess come on the plane, they tell you all the rules of the plane and stuff like that. I don't remember them ever repeating that when your meal comes, your seat must be at full... What do you call it?
Incline.
At full normal? Do you know what I mean?
Full normal.
Yeah. Like, it's... I don't know. Like, do people need that reminder?
Yes. Okay. Do you know... Okay, by the way, when you did full normal, Chris gave the shaking of the head because he knew...
Yeah, Chris is the smartest guy in the world.
He is. Yeah. And just so judgmental, and it's just so deflated. So, wait, what were we talking about?
Now recline. I was recline. Stewardess. When Amy goes on the mic, does she remind people that, hey, when your meal comes, your seat must come back up forward?
You have to when you get those jackasses that don't.
But
I agree. Even worse than that, the plane has landed, but it's still taxiing. I was on a flight back when there was like 12 adults who all got up to grab their luggage.
Oh, that's the worst.
And the flight attendant's like, sit down.
Sit down. Sit down.
And a bunch of people still did. They were still going after stuff. I'm like, are you adults? Yeah. Like, I thought when I was a child, adults obeyed the rules. They didn't.
Yeah.
But I hear what you're saying. And you know what, Carlo? Today's show is it's certainly a theme about the rules versus the rules.
I love
that. I'm talking obviously about the PGA.
Yes.
With the rules against Cam Smith, where there's letter of the law versus spirit of the law.
Oh, by the way, stupid law.
First person. Can I say, I don't know if you know that, like, Richard Nixon would often be called Dick Nixon, right?
Okay,
like, that was, you know, they would just... So someone said, Dick Nixon move, Carlo, just without the word Nixon. So that's one person texting in.
Just move what?
Put
my seat back up?
Yes, yes. Someone is texting in that. I feel we could just do the whole show on to recline or not to recline. That is the question. Whether this is better in the mind of passengers. Anyway, also, Dean from Etobicoke writes in, Jays, not the best. Best six bounces, Zalatoris. Biggest winner, Nathan Rourke. That's the Lions quarterback. He was incredible.
Wow, that guy. I told you last time we did the show together, I said, this guy's the CFL Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
He's incredible, man. Absolutely. And the CFL, man, what a couple of slates of games last week. A lot of excitement.
Incredible, incredible. We'll get it. Okay, you know what? On the other side, because obviously the biggest stories is the Jays, not the best.
Not the best
FedEx Cup was incredible. Tennis is back in Toronto. All the Italians dominating for TFC.
Forza.
That's right. But we also need to discuss this. Nathan Rourke, he's gotten so good. The league needs to step up and maybe wound one of his knees. We got to keep him out of the NFL. I'm not saying we got to go full Kathy Bates in misery.
Or just pay the guy.
They can, but the NFL can still pay more. So, yeah, pretty packed show. Oh, God, people are writing in now. Do you recline or do you not recline? Text us at 10-50-50.
Yes.
Carlo's very pro-recline. I am not, but I'm not doing this as a morality debate against Carlo. We have different ways of looking at it. It's not that he's evil. It's just that he's selfish. Time now for traffic.
Oh, here we go.
Good morning, everyone. I think my voice just cracked there. I have hit puberty. This is gameplay. I'm now just ruining.
Jeez, Matthew.
let's do this all
again.
It's
not good, eh?
And I got to tell you, Phil, not my best moment. Of course,
it's okay, buddy. It's Monday morning, man. That's the excuse.
Let's shake off the Mondays. Good morning, everyone. This is TSN 1050. You are listening to the flagship morning radio show. It is First Up. That is Carlo Koliakovo. I'm Matthew Kaus in for Aaron Karolnick. I'm trying to think if I have all the information out there. People are texting in, Carlo, their opinions on the recline. This is because Kara Wagland said, what do you do if there's a mother with a child? Do you still recline? Carlo's like, yes, you do it, and you laugh in the mother's face.
No, I didn't say you laugh in the mother's face.
I'm being sarcastic. One person didn't like you from Hespler, Ontario. Then someone else writes in, Thomas from Mississauga East. Thank you for making sure that
Mississauga East.
Very different than Mississauga West. Let me tell you, the two sides, they do not
go north and south.
Yeah, they go to square one and they fight. Yes. It's pretty simple. If an airline decides to put reclining seats on an aircraft, then the airline has decided that as a paying passenger, you have the right to recline your seat anytime during the duration of the flight. So that from Thomas, who is an aggressive recliner.
And let's be honest, that is the rule. That should be the rule, and that should be the way it should be self-policed, right?
Unless, look,
the other self-policing should be that when you're on an extended flight and there's a meal that comes and you put your table down, your seat should come back up to its normal spot. Simple. I don't know why we have to be the judge and the juror here when it comes to flying. But to me, it just it's pretty laid out perfectly. Right.
Yeah. See, you and I would disagree on that. To me, the amount of space you have gets uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable angle, and you feel more crunched in when the person reclines. It's harder to get access to that little pocket in front of you. It's just it's a pain in the ass. Don't recline. It'd be a good teammate. Pass to your teammate when he hasn't scored a goal in 20 games on an empty net situation. Whatever. But you and I differ. You and I differ on this one. Right. That's fine. Real quick, my thought on the on Nathan Rourke of the BC Lions, almost 500 yards, comeback win against Calgary.
500 yards. That was incredible. What an incredible comeback.
I know. You know what? Someone in the CFL, they need to do something to make sure he never leaves for the United States. Like, they got to, like, plan. Nothing. No, what I'm saying is this guy is so good. He's going to get a tryout. He's going to be on an NFL roster. Mm. I'm not saying he's going to be a starter, but he's going to be a backup at the very least. He's going to be on a practice squad. A lot of times you can make more money that than you can in the NFL, than you can in the CFL. So I'm saying right now, someone needs to, like, plant a rumor to all the NFL teams that Nathan Rourke takes a special brand of steroid never seen before. We got to keep this guy. We got to keep this guy from leaving.
This is what you do if you're BC. Like, you know, the city of Vancouver has a lot of good restaurants, a lot of good amenities that you can use. You start spoiling him. Say, hey, you want free sushi for life?
That didn't work. It didn't work with Kawhi. We got to do more money, my man. We got to go the extra distance. We got to, right. We got to convince him the NFL doesn't exist.
Well, here's a question for you, Matthew.
Yeah.
Nathan Rourke or Daniel Jones? Who do
don't
you
do
choose?
I take Nathan Rourke. One of them's been successful on the field of play.
Don't
the other
do that to me.
God, my stupid team. By the way, we got to get into it at some point. I ignore 99% of the preseason beyond injuries and a dude who can punt the ball 82 yards.
So it's funny you say that because I'm the same way. Like up until now, I would say, or up until me working with Aaron Kralnick full time, I never paid attention to any preseason games. Like I wouldn't even care to watch it. And would just pay attention to the results and make sure that, you're up to date on injuries and stuff because you got your fantasy football drafts coming up at the end of the month. But Aaron Kralnick has turned me into such...
Don't do it.
I wouldn't say like such an observer, okay? Because he's such a degenerate gambler. And degenerate gambler in a good way because he actually makes money. Like this is a guy that is in it. And he's into everything. And with gambling, obviously, taking a big presence in sports nowadays, there's people out there that bet on this stuff, including him.
Oh yeah.
So because I pay attention to it more now just to see how everything plays out.
Yeah. Oh, no. And the reason is that sometimes you can find value because there is chaos in the preseason, so it makes it harder to set lines. And that's why it's done. I avoid it beyond betting on the Ravens in the preseason.
Right. How about that crazy streak the Ravens have going on right now?
They haven't lost like 5 years or something.
I know. But unbeaten in like 5 years in preseason.
And they have one playoff win to show for it. So, again, Ravens, good team, just not so much in the playoffs. We'll stay with the Jays, or we'll get to the Jays next because we got Steve Phillips joining us. But how good was the PGA late? Like the best time for the PGA when it's not a major is get us on a Sunday, get us on some drama, and we had that at the FedEx Cup playoff holes.
Oh my God!
Will Zalatoris gets his first ever win, earns $2.7 million, which I think is ninth place in the LIV Tour, but first place here. But an incredible fit. Like we'll get to the controversy with Cam Smith, but first, shout out to Will Zalatoris getting it done with his putter on those three playoff holes.
Not just his putter, Matthew. This guy has been such a clutch golfer this year. And people like to chirp him about his putting stroke, which rightfully so is egregious. It's one of the worst strokes I've ever seen, but it works. It works for him. And if it works for him, that's all that matters. And it was such a great event because even up until Saturday, you had a lot of good names up in the leaderboard, right? And there wasn't any gap. Like, I think the biggest lead anybody had was maybe three strokes, but two for sure. I mean, Sepp Straka had a two-stroke lead on Sunday, on Saturday, and ended up falling back. But Will Zalatoris, this guy had to struggle to make the cut on Friday, because on Thursday he shot a very porous round. I think he was 71, and then shot a 63 on Friday to get himself back into legitimate contention.
Oh, yeah.
And then Friday, or Saturday, he had another surge, put himself, in the top, I think top 10. And then Sunday, did what he needed to do again, had another clutch round. I think he shot, he was 5 under on the day, and found a way to win his first tournament. And he's just, to me, I think golf has embraced him as such a lovable guy, because he's a young guy. He's got a weird build to him. He hits the ball a ton, and there's the Happy Gilmore reference where he's the caddy of Happy Gilmore. And after he win, you saw all the memes come out of, oh, he's going to his happy place. Happy Gilmore is, happy for him that he won and stuff like that. And so, and the drama that sort of, that presented itself into the playoff and down the stretch was just unbelievable theater. Something that I haven't seen in my life before, what happened on the last hole in the par three, where he was supposed to go in the water and it took 6 bounces off of a rock and ledged itself underneath the grass off the green. Yeah. It was crazy.
It was incredible. He was, by the way, for the gambling side, he was plus 2,200 or 22-1 to win it. And yeah, you're right, that ball magically didn't go in the water. He gets the win, his first win. We'll debate after Steve Phillips, the Cam Smith two-stroke penalty. I think most people are upset about the when versus the why. Mm. But on the other side, it is Steve Phillips. And I got to start with this question for him. Big deal, little deal, or no deal? The Blue Jays are now 30-40 against teams with a winning record. Yeah. How good is this Jays team? We will get into that next. That's Carlo. I'm Cause. This is First Up on TSN 1050. Good morning, everyone. This is First Up. I'm Matthew Cause in for Aaron Korolnik. That, of course, is Carlo Colaiacovo. Remember, you can stream us at tsn1050.ca and the TSN app. Subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. And if you're listening to this podcast on a Monday and it is the first hour, then it means one thing. It means it is our favorite guest of the week. Yeah, I've said it. It's Steve Phillips, former Mets general manager, baseball insider, joins us every Monday and Thursday at this time. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for joining the show.
Good morning. Glad to be here. And by the way, I love my walk-up song that you guys played coming in there. That was really awesome. How did you guys know that was my walk-up music?
Well, we know it's a Monday. We want to excite you. Because you're bringing us the heat off a weekend. We don't want to give you the trumpets, because that's your closing song for a Friday when you join us later in the week.
Wow. Great trumpets. Good. Well played, Carlo. Wow.
Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely. Also, I believe Christy Averro, found that was your favorite song on Facebook. Steve, I want to start here big picture. And the Jays, they lose another series. They haven't had back-to-back wins in August. But they still have the first wild card in the American League. So, it's not like anyone should be panicking. But you're allowed to be a little bit bummed out. But then I saw this one stat, and I just want to know, Steve, from your perspective, big deal, little deal, or no deal, the Jays are now 30-40, so 10 games under 500 against teams who have a record that is 500 or better. Big deal, little deal, or no deal?
Well, it's a little deal. I mean, it tells some part of a story, but it doesn't tell what, it shows some part of the past, but it doesn't, necessarily project the future. And any team in the big leagues can beat any other team on a given day. Now, that being said, they've not played some of their better baseball against some of the better teams, but it can also be timing factors of, sometimes who you play is when you play them. You could be playing down a little bit. They could be playing up, and the flow of your season goes that way. But, it's not paralyzing. It's not crippling. It's not damning information that will make me think that that when the Jays do get to the playoffs, that they're necessarily going to be overmatched by any of those other teams, because we know that on any given day, they can get one of their starters and three of their starters to pitch a gem against the opposition and against a good hitting lineup. Now, they haven't done it all the time. They haven't always been consistent, but they're still a team that in a short series can beat the best teams in baseball. So, it's a little bit of a story, and it means that it's something to keep an eye on, and they probably don't have as much margin for error against the better teams, but they can still beat them.
Well, Steve, if the Cleveland Guardians gave the Jays a little bit of information about themselves, and it's something that maybe we discussed post-trade deadline when they didn't really do much to change the look of their lineup by adding a good left-handed bat. We said that against good pitching, this Blue Jays team will struggle. And we saw Friday night against Quantrill, and we saw yesterday against Bieber. I mean, for a Blue Jays team that is supposed to be built around its offense, they only mustered four runs in a three-game series. That has to be concerning for this team, especially a team without one of their spark plugs in George Springer not available to them right now.
Yeah, I think that the Springer absence is a significant one. You know, because he's a table setter, he's a power hitter, he's a run scorer, he's a run producer. And Whit Merrifield is not the same level of offensive player that George Springer is. And, where he can still get on. The thing to remember, too, about playoff baseball when we get there, or when you're facing a great pitcher, I'll never forget, I was broadcasting a game and Jim Leland was set. This was a number of years ago, and he was getting set to play against Johan Santana, who at the time was pitching with the Minnesota Twins, even before he went to the Mets. And, we talked to him about it, and he talked about his lineup, and he said, listen, against an ace like this, he said, I put as many guys in the lineup as I can that can hit home runs. He said, because you're not going to muster, four hits in an inning against a guy like this. You've got to hope you get a bloop and a bomb, or somebody makes an error, or he walks somebody, and then you can hit it to the gap and score a run. So you need guys that can slug to where you could get extra bases. And so, when you face a team like the Indians, who have really good starting pitching. I mean, Quantrill pitched on Friday was excellent. Tristan McKenzie is one of the best kept secrets, and he is really figuring his stuff out. And then Shane Bieber's been one of the best pitchers in the game, had injury issues the last couple of years, but is still one of the best in the game. There's no insult or disappointment about getting shut down by the Indians. They've got really good pitching, so there's no shame in it. But that being said, the power bats are the things that on days like that, you have to prevail and you have to win in playoff baseball. Power bats are the ones that matter, because you don't get four hits in an inning. The great pitchers don't walk a lot of guys. And so you've got to make your opportunities and believe that you're in scoring position with the batter at the plate, as opposed to trying to, get a couple singles and put somebody in scoring position.
And that's how the Jays won on Saturday. It was on two home runs. Yeah. And to add, Carlo, to your point, in the series against Cleveland, total of 17 hits, but two walks and 22 strikeouts on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 2 of 12 with runners in scoring position. They had opportunities on Sunday with men on base, just weren't able to get it done. Steve, since I'm an old-timey guy, I'm conservative. I like the old stats the way they are. They're never changing my mind. So that the case, Jose Berríos must be a better pitcher than Kevin Gausman, because Berríos is 8-5 and Gausman is 8-9.
Right. No, you're 100% right. I mean, I tell you, you are old school, and the game has passed you by.
Damn it.
Yeah, no, it has. I mean, it's finally realized that.
It's a long way of me saying Gausman, he sort of ran into some bad luck on Sunday, but on the other side, oh my Lord, Jose Berríos is last in all of baseball with an ERA of 5.61 among 58 qualified starters. By the way, why is only 58 qualified starters? That number feels low. But Jose Berríos, dead last in ERA.
Yeah, so I'll answer the first one. There's only 58 because, we don't let starters go deep into the game. And in order to qualify, you have to pitch one inning for every game that your team has played. And so we just don't have a lot of guys who have done that. And, that number gets less and less every year. And then I think that for Berríos, it's in there. We have seen flashes of it. And that for whatever reason, they can't keep him locked in Look, he's never been a number one starter. I mean, even when he was the ace of the Twins, he really wasn't a number one guy. It's a little bit like Kikuchi or Hyunjin Ryu when they got him, in that, you know, he had more stamina and you know, ability to go deep in the game than did Ryu. But Ryu, you know, pitched really well, but he wasn't really necessarily an ace. Barrios has good stuff. He has the ability to be a very effective major league pitcher. He's better than what he's performed. You know, his rogue numbers are really bad. And then they got the rain out, which pushed him back home. But then that didn't make it any better. They can't just seem to get him locked in on things. And so, you know, and look, you change teams. You go to a new club. You know, the pitching coach, Pete Walker, is one of the best in the game. But something's just not clicking right now with him. And I still believe that he's too much in the strike zone. He throws too high a percentage of pitches. And that there's no doubt in the hitter's minds. They can always look for a pitch over the plate because he tries to get hitters out by throwing the ball in the strike zone, as opposed to starting at the at bat by throwing it in the zone, but then expanding it later out of the zone. He keeps trying to throw his breaking ball in for a strike instead of starting it as a strike and then breaking it for a ball to get the hitter to chase. And so that's where I see some part of his challenge is I think he's almost too much in the zone. And he's got to be willing to be able to throw it off the plate sometimes to get people to chase. He's not a big walk guy. He throws a lot of strikes, and his, you know, first pitch strike percentage is very good. So they'll figure it out because it's in there. And they need to do it quickly, though, because if they're going to be a real formidable team in the postseason, they need, you know, Manoah, Gausman, and Barrios to be the 1-2-3.
Well, they also need Yusei Kikuchi to be quality for them down the stretch here, too. And he kicks off a series against Baltimore, a team that is right in the hunt, chasing the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays, look, as bad as that's been over their last stretch, I mean, 1-4 in their last 5, 2-6 in their last 8, they still, you know, hold the top seed in the wild card. But, man, this series against Baltimore, who would have thought the series against Baltimore in mid-August would be so pivotal, you know, with their success and potential playoff picture this, you know, at this time of year. So how much importance do you put on this series, especially with Kikuchi leading it off?
Yeah, I think it's important. This game's important not even so much as the win and loss. Now, obviously, you know, they want to win. But, you know, Kikuchi, when you're setting up a series, you know, going into it, you want to be able to go in and be able to have your bullpen at a good, you know, strength level throughout the course of the series. And if you go in game one and you get a clunker, and you've got to go deep into the bullpen, and you've got guys throwing in game situations that aren't their normal game situations, where you've got high leverage pitchers pitching in low leverage situations, then you're setting yourself up the next day with a more fatigued pitcher who's not going to be, who's not going to pitch in a high leverage situation. And you're like, okay, well, now he pitched yesterday. He's a little worn out. You're going to get less stuff from him. So Kikuchi needs to give some length to be able to stay in the game. And again, it all comes down to him. You know, he's the opposite of Barrios. Kikuchi's got to attack hitters. Somehow they've got to get him to understand he doesn't need to nibble the corners. He needs to attack the zone. You know, and every pitcher is different. So Barrios is too much in the strike zone. For me, Kikuchi is too far out of the strike zone, particularly early in the count, because when you fall behind, then the hitter knows now you've got to throw it over the plate. And if you don't, I'm going to take it. But if you throw it over the plate, now I'm sitting there and I'm going to look to drive the ball. I'm not just going to look to make contact. You know, because if it's 2-0 or 3-1, I've got margin for error right now as a hitter. I'm going to jump out of my shoes when I see that fastball over the plate. And so I think that's where he gets himself in trouble. And they haven't been able to get him convinced yet to stop nibbling and just throw it over. So it's a big night. The bullpen's been really good, you know, until Trent Thornton giving up some runs. But they had like 13 and a third scoreless innings out of the bullpen. They pitched well, but in support of the starters who have not been great, as you mentioned, some bad luck. But the offense is really the key in all of this. The way to give Kikuchi a breather and to give him the confidence to throw it over the plate, score some runs for him. Some runs, and then, you know, it's 5-0, and you say to him, throw it over. He's like, okay, because if I throw it over and they hit it out, it's still not going to hurt the game. So, you know, they need to do that, and I'd love to see the offense give him that protection as he goes into his start.
Yeah, that would be a welcome sight, that's for sure. Steve, as we headed into the weekend on Friday, there was a massive bomb dropped in the Major League Baseball as Fernando Tatis Jr., was suspended 80 games for using PEDs. What type of surprise face did you have on when you heard this news, and how massive of a loss is this for San Diego?
Yeah, I think, you know, my feeling was there was obviously shock, but then it was just sadness. It wasn't like, you know, I didn't go to, boy, the Padres, you know, their season. I went to, wow, this is sad for all of us. Like I was dying for him to get back in the lineup. I could not wait to get him back on the field, whether they got Juan Soto or not. Fernando Tatis Jr. is one of the most exciting, amazing players in baseball. He's one of those guys that I look at him, and I think, geez, I want to be him just for a day. Like, I want to be him. Like, he's the coolest dude ever, and he rakes. And so it's sad because, you know, he's one of our stars. Now, you know, his explanation, you know, that he had ringworm and he took some medication for it, and I'm sure people checked it out, whether that you could potentially be the cause of it all. He seems sincere in that that's what it was. And so, you know, but we all are, you know, programmed now to not believe the stories.
It's a pretty weak excuse, though, Steve, when you really think about it. I mean, if he had ringworm, don't you go to the trainer and ask the trainer
you
should take?
Right. No, you would. And so, you know, it's really disappointing. I think, you know, for the Padres, there's a part of it that can really tear apart the fabric of the team because he is like, you know, he is at the middle of all of that, even when he's, you know, they got Soto, and they didn't turn it around. Because I think there's a lot of them that were waiting for Tatis to come back and say, okay, now we're ready to go to make our run. Let's see what we look like. And so I think it tears apart the fabric of the team for the Padres in many ways. And, you know, they're going to have to try to recover from that. Manny Machado will sort of lead the way with it. And the Soto addition now probably, you know, at least gives them something to hang on positive to look forward to. But it's just, it's sad and devastating. And, you know, I think for so many kids who love Tatis, this is the start of a, you know, what, a 14-year contract, you know, with the Padres. And you know, he's one of the stars of our game for the future. And now one of our stars we know already who's potentially a future Hall of Famer probably isn't going to be a Hall of Famer because of a positive test at the age of, what, 23, 24.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about, Steve? You know as well as I, the Hall of Fame voters, they never look at steroids when it comes to who gets in and who gets out. God, why do we have you as an insider with such faulty information like that? Steve, always appreciate. Thank you so much for joining the show today. We will talk to you later in the week.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
You as well. That is Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB insider. Follow him on Twitter, at Steve Phillips GM. All right, Carlo, on the other side, Cameron Smith gets a two-stroke penalty. Judging by your Twitter account, you have thoughts. We will get into that in just a moment. You are listening to First Stop right here at TSN 1050. Time now for track. Welcome back, everyone. This is the Step Brothers edition of First Stop on TSN 1050. I'm Matt Cause, a.k.a. Dale Doback, in for a.k.a. Aaron Karolnik. That's Carlo Koliakovo. And now what was Brennan? Brennan, you're Brennan. That's right. It took me a second to get that right. It's Monday. It's early. So we got about 3 minutes here. I'm going to make my thought on Cam Smith, and I want to get yours because you were talking a lot about it on Twitter. The FedEx Cup playoffs. Congrats to Will Zalatoris. Wins his first event of the PGA Tour. Not a bad time to win it. He now gets lots and lots of money. But Cam Smith was issued a two-stroke penalty before his final round on Sunday, and that dropped him from 2 back of the lead to 4 strokes back. He was docked 2 strokes for an improper placement of his ball on the 4th hole during the 3rd round, and they didn't tell him until, you know, pretty close to the start of Sunday. It angered people who wagered maybe on Cam Smith to win, so if the gambling community was pissed. But what were your thoughts, Carlo?
Yeah, I first of all, my thoughts were I was confused because I didn't see the ruling or hear about that ruling until like midway through when I started to tune in because I was golfing yesterday. And so I knew going into the day that Cam Smith was 2 shots off. He was at a minus 11. And then when I tuned in, he was 3 holes in and at minus 9. I'm like,
ooh,
what the hell happened? This guy double bogey?
Yeah.
And so I looked at his scorecard and I didn't see anything. I'm like, is this score wrong? What am I missing here? So I searched Twitter and I ended up finding out that they made an announcement before the round started that he was assessed a 2-stroke penalty. And then when I saw the explanation behind it, I just shook my head. I'm like, This has to be the stupidest rule that the PGA has in their rule book, because he went into the water, okay, yeah. Which is an automatic stroke penalty. So you, because the area is marked red, you get point of entry on your relief. So point of entry, you have to drop the ball from the top of your knee and get, you know, a ball placement. So usually there's a rules analyst that's there making sure that he properly drops his ball, properly places his ball so that he can proceed with his next shot. And my beef is okay, well, if I don't know if there was a rules analyst. I just think that he just marked it. But we're talking about a painted line on a piece of grass. Why the hell does it matter if the ball is touching a painted line? If he can find a way to get his club on the ball, he's already getting a penalty for going into the water. Why does it matter if it's touching a painted line? And to me, that what bothers me, Matthew, is there's been a ton of PGA players, including all the players that have left for the LIV Tour, and yes, a lot of them have left for the money, that have complained about some of the stupid rules that golf has. Another stupid rule that I think they have is when you hit a ball into the middle of the fairway and it lands into a divot, you have to play it as it lies. Why? It's not your fault the ball went into the divot in the middle of the fairway. You should get a free place out of that. And these are all these stupid rules because it's in the traditional book of the PGA that they continue to live by. Why not just make rules simple?
Okay.
Hey, you know what? It landed on the line. Who cares? If you can play it, play it. You already assessed the penalty. And to penalize a guy two strokes before a tournament even starts, Matthew, you know how hard it is to make up two strokes when you're in contention?
It's incredibly hard. All right, let's continue this debate on the other side because we haven't even got to the heart of it. I don't actually care about the rules. Those have always been the rules, the stodgy rules of the PGA. If you want to change rules, do it in the off season. My issue was not the what, it was the when.
And right.
There's also a betting angle. We'll do that in just a moment. That's Carlo. I'm Cause. Time now for traffic.